It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo, South America, Australia, France, Germany, UK, America.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running for this 22nd day of July 2020. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. That's where we gather in the chat room every evening, some of us do. And to participate in a merry, wacky, zany, real-time multimedia extravaganza. Yes. And consequently, you'll enjoy it too. If you pop by, just pick out a screen name and a password. You'll be greeted by early arrivers Anatole and Jimmy and Squeaky, and capably moderated by pinch hit midweek chat room utility moderator and all around great guy Steve from Georgistan. Steve! Yeah. Blob! So pop on by. What the heck? It's fun. We have reached midweek, and this week, there in the carry out only Fellowship Hall kitchen of the Cathedral of Common Sense, it was a high summer shrimp boil. Big, beautiful red potatoes done up in the Zatarain's shrimp boil concoction. White corn on the Silver King corn on the cob. And oodles and oodles and oodles of shrimp fresh out of the Gulf. When they're that fresh, they taste like butter. No need for cocktail sauce or anything. Yummo. All kidding aside, like I said, this is that time of year when family visits. And there is always a great, great big load of shrimp brought. And wow. Fan-freaking-tastic. And because there's very little time. And so consequently, yesterday was a 2-hour program. Today's a 2-hour program. But instead of starting late, I'm going to end early. That way it sort of balances. So we'll knock off at the end of hour number 2 and I'll be able to go over and, bid them farewell. So I will ask your indulgence on that. And thank you in advance. Every program here at The Horn begins with gratitude. This program, Randy, there is a Silver Queen. There's a Silver Queen and a Silver King, and I think there's a Silver Princess. But this was Silver King. I think it's a distinction that only matters among corn. But as I said, this program begins with gratitude because y'all are the ones who keep it on the air. And so thanks go out to our 22nd day of the month subscribers. Thank you very kindly to Tirani and Colin and Bill and Felicia, formerly of Nebraska, now of Southern California. Thanks also to Shorty in L.A. and Tom and Tirani for jumping in. The way that works out, well, we're running a little bit behind this week, but that's to be expected with the way things are. Fundraising goal stands at $460. Yes, your challenge did get met, Steve. So thank you for that. But we're at $460 to go. That's uh, Well, you know the math on it. And hopefully we'll knock some of that down and keep paying on the bills and make sure that there's a broadcast, a network for, you know, this is a broadcast network that exists on a month-to-month basis, sometimes week-to-week. So thank you in advance for getting us started on that. Prayer meeting Wednesday, yeah, and we've got prayer meeting stories. And if ever you've thought that that maybe you'd seen the height of evangelical evility, well, I think we may have found a new low. Oh, well, thank you, Steve. Steve says put me down for another $30 challenge. So hopefully that will get met, and that would take us, that'd take us down to just 400 to go. So that would be yesterday and today. So thank you, Steve. Steve's willing to double the first $30 that comes in. Thank you. We've gotten started. Thank you, Jeremy. There's $25 to go on Steve's challenge now. Thank you. And Steve also notes, subject line, Strider, Aragorn, in The Lord of the Rings, to Bilbo in The Prancing Pony Inn. Strider, are you frightened? Bilbo, yes. Strider, not nearly frightened enough. Steve says, Bob, I looked at my spreadsheet to see where we are right now. This brief conversation between Strider and Bilbo hits the nail on the head. There are 4 million infected people in 4 months total in the U.S. alone. That's about 25% of infections in the world, with 4.25% of the population. That's 1 million a month. The death rate is increasing. The infection rate is increasing. We now account for nearly 30% of the daily infections worldwide, with just 4.25% of the population. We're adding 470,000 cases and rising per week. That's 2 million per month, double the amount over the last 4 months. On July 1st, we added 844,241 cases in the previous 30 days. On July 21st, we added 1,621,146 over the previous 30 days. That's nearly double the 30-day rate in just 21 days. We've added nearly 1 million in the last 15 days. If things continue going up at the rate they currently are rising, we will be adding 1 million cases every 10 days. That's 3 million a month. That's 15 million cases by year's end. Even if the rate stays the same, we'll be adding 1.333 million per month, which is another 5.5 million to 6 million by year's end. In addition of the global number of new cases on July 23rd, we accounted for 34.58% of that total, with just 4.25% of the population. Not nearly frightened enough. Says Steve, my little ray of sunshine. And it is. It is. It is chilling. It is terrifying. And it may be. Look, of tiny snowflakes are massive avalanches made. And we're nowhere near the end of this thing. As Otto in the chat room points out, Spanish flu killed 500,000 Americans. Yes, the dirty white Kansas pig farmer flu. Yeah. Yeah, I thought it was Strider and Aragorn and Frodo too, Megan. But I didn't want to make a thing of it. So, I find it's getting, you know, even in the limited amount of going and doing that, I've caught myself forgetting to put my mask on 2 or 3 times. And I go back and I put it on, but it's like there's some sort of mental block or something. And it's worrisome. And I know people are tired of hearing about it day in and day out. And it's a little bit like whistling past the graveyard. But the closest thing we have to funny these days is hearing these crazy-ass COVIDiot maggot mask holes screeching about why they don't want them. So you know, we'll continue to get some giggles along those lines. $15 left in Steve's challenge. Thank you, Jude, in the Great Northwest. Jude has been traveling to Portland to participate in the demonstrations and protests there. And please, Jude, stay safe. Stay safe. Because the fascist bully boys have the bit in their teeth. And they're raising hell and trying to turn this country into a full-on fascist nightmare. As noted, this is straight out of Benito Mussolini's playbook. Jeremy with a note, subject line COVID, but Bob, COVID is just a global left plot. It'll end November 3rd. I know. It ain't gonna. And I'm still bothered by that whole vaccine story out of Mother Russia. Something stinks. Something is rotten in the state of Denmark. And something that must be taken into account at a sad moment, especially in the progressive broadcast world. A note from Joey. We lost Michael Brooks on Sunday night, and for those of you who do not know who Michael Brooks was, let me tell you a little bit about him. Michael hired on to work with Sam Cedar about 7 years ago and was so good as a sidekick that he virtually took over Sam's show and eventually started his own show featuring many subjects, but was primarily political. Michael was a genius who was well-versed on many subjects. He grew up very poor, and he and his sister, as children, were often on food stamps. Michael had a huge heart for the poor and downtrodden people of this country and the world. I had the privilege of meeting Michael in Brooklyn, New York on April 8th, 2017. Back when Sam held a meet and greet along with Janine Garofalo in New York. At the end of the show, Sam stayed around to talk to everybody, and Michael was making the rounds as well as greeting as many people as he could. Then he came toward me, and I couldn't help but reach out, shake hands, and say hello, because he was moving very quickly through the crowd. I congratulated him on his PhD, as I had read a little bit about him before the event, and really appreciated that I had taken some interest in his personal life. He did. So instead of quickly moving on to the next person, as he seemed to be doing, he took a few extra minutes to converse with me, which really amazed me. I could not help but ask him about foregoing the opportunity to study in Oxford, England. That would have made him a Rhodes Scholar. Again, he liked that I recognized his amazing academic prowess and just simply made the point that he felt like after Trump being elected, he needed to remain in the States because there was a lot of work to be done in order to save democracy. He's right. There's a lot of work to be done. Before I knew it, 20 minutes had passed, and this man with this amazing acumen took an interest in me as we discussed Ohio politics, with which he was quite familiar, not surprisingly. I was amazed that I was able to carry on a conversation with this brilliant man and was actually holding my own as we discussed our local energy company, trying to foist the cost of the dilapidated nuclear facilities onto the public and the toxic algae blooms in Lake Erie. However, that was who Michael was, as he handled callers on his political program via Discord just the same way. There was never a dumb caller, as he had a great ability to draw people out by taking time with them and fostering the caller's thoughts. He did not make people feel inferior to his amazing intellect. In January of 2018, Michael held his own meet and greet in New York, and after the show I said hello, and he actually remembered my name and our discussion about the nuclear plants and the perils facing Lake Erie. I could not believe it. Then again, maybe I could. Amazingly, Michael said to me, "Don't worry, the energy company will eventually bribe the politicians and they'll pass legislation to force the taxpayers to clean up their mess." Those were the last words that he ever said to me, and the last time I saw him, as the brilliant 37-year-old genius died suddenly Sunday night of an apparent blood clot in his throat. God. We've lost a mighty man in the fight for democracy and for the democratic principles for which we stand, as he was just at the beginning of his zenith in his political career. And what do you know? The goddess of irony strikes again as I picked up the newspaper this morning just a few days after Michael's death, and on the front page in big bold letters was the story of the arrest of Ohio House Speaker Larry Householder. Now, I'll add editorially, Joey, you need to make sure in references like this you say Republican House Speaker Republican Larry Householder. Householder's accused of taking all kinds of bribes and perks from the energy company, which via SB6 has foisted onto the taxpayers of Ohio the financial obligation of the cleanup of their antiquated nuclear facilities. And they also propped up some failing coal operations as well. That's worth noting. This has been Joey's Journal for Wednesday, the 22nd of July, with Giraffe looking out for the locals and not taking any bribes. Well, Giraffe's got that long neck, so and he's busy standing on all four legs, so it's hard to get him to accept one. That's how it is with giraffes. But what Joey says is true. $60 million in bribes from energy companies to palm off their failing companies on the people of the state of Ohio. $60 million. Only one company, First Energy, was really, really pushing for the bill. And lo and behold, guess who bribed him? And sadder still, the passing of Michael Brooks. Because, well, there aren't enough of us working this side of the street to begin with. And any time we lose one, we lose a lot. And the entire Horn Family Community Congregation's sympathies and condolences go out to Michael Brooks' family and everyone who loved him. I know Sam must be absolutely leveled. So that gets us on something like a start. But it is prayer meeting Wednesday. And we got some really nasty prayer meeting Wednesday stuff. Now let me check in with Brother Deacon Asa here for a second. Oh, dear, that can't be any good. Sparky just shot me a note and said they're getting set up for this evening's shit show. Ugh. Well, I imagine it's underway by now, isn't it? Shall we check? Should we? This is going to be nasty. Oh, I guess it starts at 5:30. Good, that gives us a little bit more time. But being as how it's prayer meeting Wednesday, we need to deal with some of that stuff. Ugh. A note coming in from Elbert in Rhode Island. CNN reported today that federal goons have been only sent to cities with Democratic mayors. Absolutely true. Delta and United Airlines are now requiring all passengers to wear masks. If a Delta passenger objects to wearing a mask, Delta will provide them with a doctor so they explain why they can't wear a mask. If they don't agree to see the doctor, Delta will throw them off the flight, hopefully in midair. Sorry, that was really mean on my part. Steve says, global hoax. Let's think about this. There are 188 countries, all of them but us, are in on the conspiracy. With all these millions of people, none of them have cracked. None of them have revealed the conspiracy. All those millions of people, they're in on it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the goon squads, apparently some of them are going to, of all places, because the goddess of irony at least provides us with a chuckle for once in a while. They're going to Albuquerque. Here we are, Pismo Beach, and all the clams we can eat. Oops. Shouldn't have taken that wrong turn at Albuquerque. But there we are. The governor doesn't want them. The mayor doesn't want them. The attorney general of New Mexico doesn't want them. But the sheriff of Bernalillo County is a maggot, and he wants them. So there, that kind of explains it. What this is, these goon squads, the deployment of these goon squads, these fascist bully boys, is a test. It's a loyalty test. And so consequently, the maggot administration is discovering who will be the loyal foot soldiers in the clampdown. And in many cases, they're dirty sheriffs who are willing to trash the Constitution in order to maintain loyalty and enforce loyalty to that jiggling adipose wad of vanities, jealousies, and petty grievances. Just saying, the top 10 states for violent crime, says David in South Carolina, Stan, are the feds attacking these states? Alaska? No. New Mexico? Hell of an earthquake in Alaska, though. 7.8 up near Homer, which ain't far from Wasilla, I guess, maybe, don't know. But I saw the news of the earthquake, and I tried to figure out something. I guess, Caribou Barbie's not there anymore, is she? Top 10 states for violent crime in the United States. Alaska, New Mexico, Tennessee, Arkansas, Nevada, Louisiana, Alabama, Missouri, South Carolina, and Arizona. And yeah, the feds are headed for Albuquerque. The goons. They really do need to be outed somehow. David also adds, the alleged assassin, the story from a couple of days ago, Robert Maxwell, is connected to Kroll, which is the same intelligence group that Hollander worked for. So there's that. Of course, just a coincidence. I don't see where they were there at the same time, but still. That's the thing about corrupt organizations. People pass through, but for the most part, they self-perpetuate their malignance. Yep. Steve in New York, Michael Brooks. I actually heard an interview he did with you on mountaintop removal and the destruction of Appalachia and the murder of its people. Mm-hmm. That was a while back, but I recall. And let's see, we're down to $10 to go on Steve's challenge. Thank you. Thank you, Renee in D.C. Thank you very kindly. And thank you, Renee, for putting out a show tweet every day at the beginning of the program. Much appreciated. So, as I said, we've got prayer meeting Wednesday stuff, and like I said, there's no bottom with this bunch. It doesn't get any more, it'll always get more evil. How about our buddies, firefighter Prophet Mark Taylor and Chris McDonald? Seems like firefighter Prophet Chris McDonald's about the only guest that Chris McDonald can get on his program. And it's always nutty, hateful time when they do get together. Flavio wants to know, can't the governor of New Mexico order the New Mexico National Guard to Albuquerque against the Fed goons? Yes. Yes, she can. But as is always the case in America, and as is the case in any emerging fascist dictatorship, you never really know just how loyal the troops are. And so you wouldn't necessarily want to call them out and then have them all go over to the other side. Because beyond being embarrassing, that can get dangerous. You know, it's happened. In the aftermath of the, third triumvirate, Mark Antony and Octavian and, who was the third one? Lepidus? Lepidus moved north to attack Mark Antony's army, and Antony's army whipped his, and then all of Lepidus's men went over to Mark Antony. Authoritarian autocracy is dangerous like that. But anyway, Chris McDonald and Mark Taylor, the firefighter prophet, who claims that he predicted 9/11. Well, these two goons are both there on their little webcams, wearing their Trump hats. And at a time when people all over this country are noting their respect and sympathy for the passing of Representative John Lewis, you can always count on these vile white wing bastards to filthy things up. Representative Lewis died Friday night, and we all know his history. And so, enter the maggot.
To start.
Yeah. Revolting. Yeah, go away. There we go. All better now. Yeah, what's that you say? What's that you say, Chris McDonald and Mark Taylor? Oh, God, get the hockey puck. And maybe a bucket. Maybe a bucket instead of the hockey puck. Because this is putrid.
Let me tell you something, folks. I'm from the state of Georgia. And I can tell you right now that John Lewis, and you can write your letters all you want to and your comments to me all you want to, I could care less. John Lewis was a rabid racist. He said some of the most racist rhetoric to this nation over the last 10 to 20 years of his life than any politician has ever sowed. He sowed division into this nation. He sowed discord into this nation racially. He basically...
Really? The guy who spent his life fighting racism was the biggest racist in the country. Never mind the fact that, and we've been through this before, there's no such thing as black racism. Because race was invented by white Europeans as a concept. It is not a biological thing. It's not a genetic thing. It is an invented social construct. And racism benefits white people. So in order to be a black racist, John Lewis would have to have been advocating white supremacy. He would have had to have been a living version of that Dave Chappelle skit of the black Klansman who didn't know he was black because he was blind. It does not exist. I don't know why this is so difficult to grasp, but it is an absolute fact. Now, you can be black and biased. You can be black and bigoted. But there is no such thing as black racism. Because race is a concept that was invented for purposes of harming black people. Easy enough, but you'd be surprised the number of people who can't get that. And here's the funny part. All the people who can't understand that always turn out to be, you know, racist. Like Christopher McCracker here. Well, I'm from Georgia. I know this stuff. Ah, Jesus.
Basically did not attend the Trump inauguration. He didn't attend Bush's inauguration. He didn't attend Bush Sr.'s inauguration or Reagan's. He attended the Democrats' inauguration. And they asked him about it.
Well, that's politics, dumbass. That's not race. Although, and, you know, he I'm sure he doesn't answer this, but should any person of color attend the inauguration of the son of a Klansman? Lest we forget, Donald J. Trump, the J stands for Klegel, is the son of a Klansman. Arrested in full Klan regalia in 1927 at a Klan riot that was aimed at Irish Catholics and the police in New York City. He was busted in Queens. The documentation is out there. So, you know, go figure. But that's, you know, that's what we're, that's the kind of people we deal with. Ah, yeah, okay, the Dave Chappelle character, Brother Deacon Asa from the, serving as the Horn Ad Hoc Research Department for the evening. The Dave Chappelle character was black white supremacist Clayton Bigsby. I know, Darlene in Connecticut, her head's probably already hurting. Wait, he sowed discord racially? How does one sow discord racially? John Lewis was being racially when he supposedly sowed discord. I know. Ah, come on, Bob, Megan says. You know, when they say someone sowed racial divisions, it means they made white supremacists feel bad for believing they're superior. Or made white supremacists just look as stupid and disproved white supremacy as thoroughly as they do every time they open their filthy white supremacist mouths. Nasty fuckers. So, back to Chris McCracker and firefighter prophet Mark Taylor. Sowing discord, by the way, the real definition of that is when you actually point out the existence of racism and the vast inequities that still exist in this country. These people are atne ute aitbre if you one what I mean.
They said, well, why don't you go to, you know, the inauguration of the Republicans? Because I don't know too many Republicans that don't go to the Democrat. We just do it out of respect because we got something called class.
Oh, yeah. He's got, yeah. That's class. Especially them Trump hats. That's classy. Stay classy, Chris.
John Lewis had no class, Mark. Every time he opened his mouth, he was always taking shots at the president, especially President Trump, more than any.
Well, that's because he's the most racist president we've had in modern history. He's the most racist president since probably Woodrow Wilson. And at least Woodrow Wilson did some good things. Tried to prevent World War II before it was even on the horizon. But he was a stone-cold racist. But that's the history of white America for the vast majority of our history. Another word about racism, Steve points out in New York. Not only what you're saying, but this. Racism requires the power to discriminate and harm through government power and institutions. The only ones with power to do that are white people. Period.
any of them. But he was always sowing racial discord. That's not a hero to me. He's not an icon. I don't care what he's done. And I'm going to tell you something. We in this country, and you're talking about them religious spirits. Let me tell you something. The same religious spirits that would go after you for something like that, they would sit there and defend John Lewis's record and defend him as being this racial icon, the fact that he fought for this and that and the other. He never.
No, nobody's ever said he was a racial icon. That's strictly Chris McCracker. He was a civil rights icon. He was a tower of the civil rights movement, filling the vacuum left when the elders of the movement either died of old age or were murdered out from under their own lives. Inauguration's missed. Steve doing a little fact-checking. John Lewis boycotted the COVID Caligulas and W's first. That's it. Fucking liar. But then again, he's an evangelical. Right. Evangelicals lie. It's who they are. It's what they are. Megan says, amazing how their own memories are totally erased. All the pot shots President Obama took, from how he handled a turkey pardon at a Thanksgiving to wearing a tan suit. Oh, my God, the tan suit. The mere mention of it sends shivers down my spine. So back to these toxic clowns.
Never fought for anything, folks. What he fought for was a racially divided America and a political America where the left controls things. And as long as they control things, John Lewis was okay. And I'm saying this from somebody from his state, folks.
Which means precisely nothing. I mean, you're from Lester Maddox's state, too. And frankly, that's a more apt comparison for you, for Chris here to be making.
Let me tell you something. I have nothing but concern for the family tonight. We don't rejoice in his death. But I'm going to tell you something. When I heard the news this weekend, I felt a solemnness come over me. And I felt in my heart that I believe in my heart tonight, Mark, that look.
God, that was him pounding the table, not me.
God is rising up. And his enemies are being scattered. Now, I don't.
Wait a minute. Did this jackass say God killed John Lewis? And not cancer? John Lewis was 80 years old. Man, you can't fix stupid.
I want people to go out of here and say, well, Chris said God killed John Lewis. I didn't.
Yeah, he just did. Ha ha.
Not say that. John Lewis was 80 years old. It was his time. And it's like all of our times. I could be dead tomorrow. You know?
Devoutly to be wished, but whatever.
You know, it's going to be my last Monday Night Spiritual Smackdown. We all have.
Really? The Monday Night Spiritual Smackdown? Because what is that? Is that from a verse in 2 Flip-Floppians? Monday Night Spiritual Smackdown. So, what he's trying to brand his racist religious babble as wrestling? Well, it Goddess of Irony's right there with us. Kind of fits, don't it?
Have our time, but the nation didn't lose an icon, Mark. The nation lost a race baiter.
Yeah, a race baiter. Yeah. Let's not talk about what kind of baiters Firefighter Prophet Mark Taylor and Christopher McDonald are. Go away, I'm baiting. Jesus, these assholes. But it gets worse. I guess when you work that corner, you have to know that the more outrageous things you say, the more Emery and Marveline and sitting there in their matching Barca loungers are going to love it. It's been a while since we had a... Oh, dear God, I hope Tracy's not listening. At least she's probably not driving anywhere. It's been a while since we had a Jesse Lee Peterson sighting. Not long enough, though. Not by a long shot. No, don't know how he got another program, but
I can think of many words to call ex-Congressman John Lewis. Hero would not be one. So she's lying. Well, maybe he is a hero because she is the daughter of Satan and he is a son of Satan. So maybe in that world, he's a hero and that he pushed evil. John Lewis, Congressman John Lewis, he did. Was
really I wish there are times I wish that Jesse Lee Peterson was performance art. There are times that I wish Jesse Lee Peterson was a character dreamed up in the fertile imagination of Dave Chappelle, but he's not, and he has some sort of an audience.
A race hustler, a loser. He divided the race.
Never lost an election, but somehow he's a loser.
He assisted in dividing the races like no one else I ever heard, like the rest of those so-called civil rights leaders.
I'm trying to figure out who ripped off whom. Did Chris McDonald rip off Jesse Lee, or did Jesse Lee rip? No. Because... No. Apparently, Jesse Lee ripped off Chris McDonald. Because that was the Monday night spiritual smackdown. Wait, let's see. So, No. Chris McDonald ripped off Jesse Lee Peterson. Jesse Lee Peterson works mornings. Whereas Chris McDonald does an evening thing. My goodness.
John Lewis was not a hero. He was a zero, not a hero. And I don't care how they put that fancy music we're open talking about him, and he's talking about all...
Yeah, that fancy music. Not the cheap low-rent music. Fancy music.
That stuff is just emotional crap to pull you in and make you accept a man who was evil as though he was good. You need to be aware of that. They try to emotionalize this to make you believe a lie. When John Lewis was alive, he did. We knew he was a race hustler. He divided the races. He did not unite them.
You know, they keep saying this over and over again, but you'll notice that neither Chris McCracker nor Jesse Lee here can provide any examples. They're just bare assertions. And assertions without evidence are garbage.
And just because he marched in a rally down in Alabama, Georgia, wherever he was, doesn't make him a hero.
Because that's what he did. He just marched. Up, two, three, four, up. 2, 3, 4. Just marched. Never mind the nightsticks and the dogs. Never mind being beaten so badly he was left for dead. Never mind the fact that he never let them stop him, that he said that he would be stopped when he was dead. And he made 80 years of his life count. Every day of the 80 years of John Lewis's life counted, mattered. As opposed to this absurdist, evangelical freak whose life, well, he's what we call here in the hills, oblivet. 10 pounds of shit in a 5-pound onion bag.
John Lewis did not do anything to earn becoming a congressman for so long.
becoming a Congress, a whole Congress. John Lewis, a Congress. Is he on a radio station? Or is he just sitting there? No, I don't know. Because I'm trying to figure out who pays this guy. I mean, this is almost as professional as Rush Limbaugh declaring that we need to emulate what? Yes, the Donner Party. We need to respond to COVID-19 by being tough like the Donner Party. Whoa. That's some professional broadcasting is what that is. Sure enough.
Aware of that. They try to emotionalize this to make you believe a lie. When John Lewis was alive, he did.
You skip a bit, brother.
To earn becoming a Congress for so long. He didn't make things better. He made them worse. He did not make things better. And that's the truth. I don't know what's in people. I do know. But why people have to lie when you die? You could be a son of Satan while you live. Very destructive. But when you die, it becomes so emotional. And people just make up lies about you.
Well, I give credit where credit's due. In his video, he put up pictures of Congressman Lewis, and at least he didn't pull a Marco Rubio and put up a picture of Elijah Cummings. So he's got that going for him.
John Lewis did not apologize for defining the races, for calling America a racist society. He was a phony. He was a race hustler. I don't know where he went when he died, but I do know, according to all the reports, he did. But he was not a good man. I don't know what he said to God before he died, but I know he did not apologize to this country for,
you know, for fighting against Jim Crow, for making sure that Jesse Lee Peterson, for instance, could drink from any water fountain he chose or even sit down at a lunch counter. No, he didn't apologize for that. But if you buy into the stuff that we, you know, the Bible business, if you buy into that, you know what was said to John Lewis when he reached those glorious gates. Well done, thou good and faithful servant. That's what was said. If that kind of thing is real, that's what was said.
Dividing and lying and doing what he did to America. He used black people for his own personal gain.
I know. Ron and Raleigh says, imagine being black and listening to this stupid fuck. It's painful, I tell you. The money must be real good to say this shit out loud, speaking of not hearing from someone in a while, E-Dub. E.W. Jackson. If there's any money in this, I'm sure that he'll be next. Yep. I know. It is breathtaking. It's breathtaking in the breadth of its stupidity for somebody as pink as me, Ron. Tracy especially, because for some reason or another, Jesse Lee clips seem to go through Tracy like a dose of salts. And so, you know, hopefully, I don't know, maybe I should go back and alter the podcast in case she listens in podcast. Tracy, don't do it. David in South Carolina, Stan, pointing out, maybe John Lewis only attends the inauguration of legitimately elected POTUSes. Well, that would let out W and COVID Caligula now, wouldn't it? I'd say. Oh, dear. The shit show. Is the shit show going? There's Matt Schlapp. Nope, he's late. He's late again. Because of course he is. Sheesh. And remember, since it is prayer meeting Wednesday, the guy who's second in command at DHS, who is allegedly the author of this goon squad assault on America, is Ken the Cooch Cuccinelli. At one point in time, I think Attorney General of Virginia, couldn't keep his job. Well, he's justifying, this is fascinating, really. He's justifying the goon squad attacks, which are being leveled at peaceful protesters, demonstrators, under the aegis of cracking down on anarchists. On the other hand, however, on his Twitter account, he's relying on Breitbart, that crybaby Andy No, Tucker Carlson's little fascist broadsheet, The Daily Caller. And most particularly Andy No. So understand that this is a fascist operation that is run by fascists for fascists. But we have to have some fun on Prayer Meeting Wednesday too. And that's why I'm so glad for stories like this. The story comes out of Owensboro, Kentucky. Yeah. Because, and Owensboro is right there at the in the bluegrass. And CBS 47 had the story. It's the story of John N. Stephanopoulos. One wonders if John N. Nah, he couldn't possibly be any relationship to... no. Or maybe. Don't know. The Davies County Sheriff's Office arrested 41-year-old John Stephanopoulos when they found him... naked, having broken into a home, naked, and covered in mud. It was 1:24 a.m. when the call came in out from dispatch of a burglary and a naked man running down the road, according to the report in the Owensboro Times. They found him inside the home again, naked. Mud and blood all over his body. And he had forced his way into the house. He had apparently punched holes in the drywall. The windows and walls were smeared with blood and mud. Broken glass floor. Eventually, a sheriff's deputy tased him just to get him to settle down, but it didn't work. They tased him and handcuffed him. But then 41-year-old John Stephanopoulos jumped up and tried to bull rush the deputy. Somehow or another, he didn't get killed. This, of course, is where I explain to you that John N. Stephanopoulos, age 41, of Owensboro, Kentucky, is white. Because if he'd been a black guy who jumped up and was wearing handcuffs and ran at a deputy, he probably would have had 92 bullets run through him. But they didn't kill him. And I'm glad of that. But police do occasionally investigate things. And so they ask people questions like, why in the world are you doing that? What the hell's wrong with you? To which John N. Stephanopoulos, 41, of Owensboro, Kentucky, responded, I was using mushrooms with Jesus, and we was playing a virtual reality video game together. Oh, dear. Mushrooms? Really? Because that sounds a hell of a lot more like PCP. Or maybe it was mushrooms on a PC pizza. God, me and Jesus doing some mushrooms, playing virtual reality. Imagine poor Emery and Marveline when they heard the screaming outside and they looked out in the road and there's this naked man covered in mud and blood running down the street. Emery, call the 911. So they threw the book at him. Indecent exposure, burglary, criminal mischief, resisting arrest, public intoxication, and menacing. I just haven't figured out. I guess there wasn't a stream nearby close enough to merit stream littering. Praise his holy name. Stay away from mushrooms, John. And I freely confess, when I saw the story, I thought, oh, Florida man. Nope, Kentucky man. And I don't often cover too many religious stories outside the United States because, frankly, we've got enough of them to last a lifetime. But this one's hard to avoid. Ecuador. Priests. Not just priests. Roman Catholic bishops in Ecuador. They put out an open letter to the government calling for the ouster of Health Minister Juan Carlos Zevallos because they're upset with him. Why are they upset with the Health Minister of Ecuador? We think that the Ministry of Health, by way of its employees and officials, appears dedicated to persecuting doctors and small distributors of chlorine dioxide, a substance proven to cure COVID-19. Many doctors know this, but combat this irrefutable knowledge. I don't think they know what that word means. Refusing to do clinical trials simply because the FDA and WHO won't do them, nor approve the chemical's use. On various occasions, communications have been addressed to the ministry on the subject, and their responses have been negative. For that reason, we are addressing you so that by your authority, you can stop this persecution of chlorine dioxide. How do you persecute a chemical? Don't know. So that there are no more deaths of defenseless Ecuadorians who suffer from this disease because of the inefficiency of the Ministry of Health. Yep. One third of the currently serving Roman Catholic bishops in Ecuador want people to treat COVID with bleach. Because big pharma. Big pharma. Big government. I don't know. Pick your, you know, pick your paranoid conspiracy theory and apply it. But they want to give their parishioners bleach. Dear God. We're all screwed, Bob. Oh, the shit show's on. Let's see how much of this I can stand.
Complete. We're going to do it properly. We've been doing it properly. Sections of the country come up that we didn't anticipate. For instance, Florida, Texas, etc. But we're working with very talented...
Hold the fuck on. They didn't anticipate that states that are run by maggot governors where people LARP and Smolik and Grabolate all over each other wouldn't get the Rona? They're not very good at that anticipating, are they?
The mayor of Chicago just said moments ago that you're doing this to divert attention from your failures on coronavirus. You are only targeting cities.
We haven't had that failure.
You are only targeting cities, though, run by Democrats. Is this just a political stunt?
Yeah, the cities, unfortunately, that are in trouble are all run by Democrats. You have radical left Democrats running cities like Chicago and so many others that we just had a news conference. And unfortunately, that's the way it is. I mean, that's the facts. When you look at Chicago and you look at the job, Mayor Lightfoot sent me a letter yesterday, and I think in their own way, they want us to go in. There'll be a time when they're going to want us to go in full blast, but right now we're sending extra people to help. We're arresting a lot of people that have been very bad. As far as the coronavirus, as you say, I think we've done some amazing things, and I think you'll probably see that if you compare our statistics to other countries, and if you look at death rates, et cetera, you're going to see, and especially into the future with what's happening, you're going to see some very, very impressive numbers for the United States. John, please.
Go ahead, John. Mr. President, do you plan to do a national strategy to help schools reopen and reopen safely? And regarding the children in your family, your son, your grandchildren, are you comfortable?
Don't talk about my kid.
Have them back in person.
No, that's don't talk about Melania's kid.
That, and we do have a national strategy, but as you know, ultimately it's up to the governors of the states. I think most governors, many governors, want the schools to open. I would like to see the schools open, especially when you see statistics like this. We have great statistics and on
great
young
statistics.
People and on safety. So we would like to see schools open. We want to see the economy open.
You mean the great statistics that say that up to 1 million children will die if you just reopen?
Price increase is up, I think they said 21%, which is a record that's never happened before. That's a great sign. We have an economy that's going to be booming. It's going to be a lot of jobs are being produced. The job numbers will be coming out shortly, meaning over the next week or so. And I think it'll be a continuation of the last 2 months. The last 2 months have been incredible. So I think we're going to have a great economy. You're going to have a fantastic next year. I think you're going to have a very good third quarter, actually, when the third quarter numbers come out. Interestingly, they'll be announced just before the election. They'll be announced around November 1st. So, I would like to see the schools open 100%, and we'll do it safely. We'll do it carefully. But when you look at the statistics I just read having to do with children and safety, they're very impressive. They have very strong immune systems.
But you would understand that the children who go to school then go back to home, they're with some live with their grandparents, sure. That there's a real risk. Would you understand if some
schools...
Well,
they do say that they don't transmit very easily, and a lot of people are saying they don't transmit, and we're looking at that. We're studying, John, very hard, that particular subject, that they don't bring it home with them now. They don't catch it easily. They don't bring it home easily. And if they do catch it, they get better fast. We're looking at that fact. That is a factor, and we're looking at that very strongly. We'll be reporting about that over the next week. Please.
Mr. President.
100 dead children in Texas. They don't catch it very well.
With new orders on mask requirements, yeah. Is that something you wish all the governors would do?
Well, a lot of the governors, they have different requirements. Some of the governors are very strong on masks. Others aren't. I think it's really going to ultimately be up to them. We've given them the facts. We've given them everything we know. They have their own facts. Some are strong on masks. And as you know, some aren't in the same ballpark. But I think, well, I think all are suggesting if you want to wear a mask, you wear it. I bring one. I have one. I've worn it. And I think when I'm in certain settings like hospitals and various, or when I'm close, when, you know, when you can't socially distance, I believe in it. Let's see, do I? I do. I have it. And if you know, in certain instances, I think you really, I think you want to travel with a mask. There are instances where you really can use it. I would believe it would be a good thing. Yeah,
sir, please. One just follow-up. D.C. Mayor Bowser came up with such an order today. It, of course, doesn't apply to federal properties, but would you encourage federal properties, and including the White House complex, to follow the order?
We're gonna make a decision over the next 24 hours. We'll let you know what that decision is.
Okay? Thank you.
Thank you. Please.
President Trump, do you agree with Senate Republicans discussing the possibility of extending short-term unemployment insurance today so that they prevent benefits from expiring?
Well, I think a lot of politicians are discussing that, Republicans, Democrats, and right now a lot of my representatives are on the Hill. They're discussing CARES Act or Phase 4, whatever you want to call it. And I think ultimately something good will come out of it. The economy is starting to really come back strongly when you look at the numbers, even with the fact that, like, California is still closed up in many big states. I think the numbers are even more impressive considering that some states, like California, big ones, are pretty well shut down. So we expect to have something over a period of time, over the appropriate period of time.
Thank you very much. These two questions are with Andrew Feinberg and J.C. Buell. One is, today you said you're sending federal law enforcement officers to run cities run by extreme politicians, that's the word you used, who happen to be all Democrats, who have supported Black Lives Matter protests.
Millions of Americans voted. I didn't say who supported. No, I said Democrat politicians. And these are the cities where you have the problem. If you look at Chicago, if you look at Detroit, if you look, I mean, look around any of these cities where we have the problems. And we're sending them help, but we're really waiting for them to call for the big help, for the big numbers, for the large numbers of people that we have ready, willing, and able. You look at Chicago, where 14 people were shot yesterday, where over the weekend, many people died and many people were shot. And over the last month, they're setting record numbers. We are waiting for the mayor, respectfully, and other mayors and governors to call us. We are ready, willing, and able to go in there with great force. Now, we also have people that are going in and arresting drug dealers, arresting some of the shooters that are doing the shooting. We know who they are. We're working with police forces. And even though in some cases they're told don't work with the federal government, the police forces have great respect for the federal government, what we do. But we're ready, willing, and able to go into these cities that are just being decimated with shooting, and we're going to help. Please.
I have a question on crime, but first, I don't think we really got an explanation yesterday on why the health experts are no longer joining you at these briefings. Can you explain why?
Because they're briefing me. I'm meeting them. I just spoke to Dr. Fauci. Dr. Birx is right outside. And they're giving me all of everything they know as of this point in time. And I'm giving the information to you. And I think it's probably a very concise way of doing it. It seems to be working out very well.
Okay, so on crime.
But they're very much involved. They're very much with the relationships are all very good. All very good. The relationships that we have with the doctors, with everybody working on the virus has been, I think, extraordinary. Kaylee's here, and I think you would say the same thing. You work with them all the time. Yeah, go ahead, please.
So, on crime, in 2016, you said it was President Obama's fault that homicides were up in Chicago. So why was it the president's fault then, but it's not your fault now?
Chicago is a disaster. The mayor is saying, don't come in. The mayor is telling us not to come in. At some point, we can void that if we have to, but we may have to at some, because it's out of control. I assume she's saying that for political reasons. I think it's negative political reasons. She's a Democrat. I'm going to be nice. She's a Democrat. She's making a big mistake. People are dying in Chicago and other cities, and we can solve the problem. They have to ask us, but we can solve the problem.
Why was it President Obama's fault in 2016? You credited it as
because him. President Obama was invited in, and he did a poor job. President Obama could have gone into Chicago. He could have solved the problem, and he didn't. In our case, they don't want us in. We can solve the problem very easily. We're equipped with the best equipment, the best people. And you see what we're doing. I mean, Portland was coming down. It was busting at the seams. And we went in and protected all the federal buildings.
You know, Jude makes a great point. Thanks to the genius of Sarah Cooper, the comedian, everything he says is now funny because all we have to do is imagine Sarah Cooper saying it. Jude says, now I can only view Sarah Cooper mouthing his words. And you know what? That's healthy. That's helpful. That takes some of the away. Ron in Raleigh says, incredible? Hey, Bob, put on your word-knowing hat. Doesn't that mean something lacks credibility? Asking for a lexicographer friend. Yes, it means it is non-credible. Uncredible. Not capable of being believed. Because our word believe, the Latin for that is credo, credere, credi, creditum, I think. And so, credo means I believe, first person, singular, active voice, present tense. I believe. So, when he's all these things, and that's the goddess of irony, tweaking his little orange pimento nose. Every time he says incredible, it's a tell that he's lying.
Respond to Joe Biden, who today described you might have heard that, as the first racist to be elected president. That was his words.
Well, you know, it's interesting because we did criminal justice reform. We passed criminal justice reform, something that Obama and Biden were unable to do. We did opportunity cities. We did the greatest. If you look at what we've done with opportunity zones, nobody's ever even thought of a plan like that. Prior to the China plague coming in, floating in, coming into our country. And, really,
and there it is, the China
doing
plague.
Doing terrible things all over the world. Doing terrible.
See, she's fucking with him. She's just fucking with him because she can now, the goddess of irony. He gets asked a question, and maybe the reporter knew that this would happen. He gets asked a question, why would Joe Biden say you're the first racist president? Joe Biden's wrong about that, of course. But why would Joe Biden say you're the first racist president? And then he answers, by saying something racist! Beautiful. Just beautiful.
Done more for black Americans than anybody, with the possible exception of Abraham Lincoln. Nobody has even been close. Thank you very much, everybody.
Mr. President, thank you. Mr. President, do you want to clarify what you said?
That's it? The shit show was a lot. Shit show 2.0 is not nearly as awesome as shit show 1.0 was. My gracious sakes. Then again, we didn't get the whole thing, so maybe we missed the really good part. Don't think so. Me neither. And I can happily announce, thank you very kindly to Irish Dave, our 400 and, well, the remainder of Steve's challenge got met, so that's 400. And Irish Dave just did have a show on me for yesterday. So we're down to $200. Thank you. Thank you, Irish Dave, very, very kindly. James in Illinois, dead kids.
Oh, those kids were going to die anyway.
This is, when you're talking about Republicans, after all, you're talking about people who don't give a fuck about little children who get blown away in school shootings. I mean, after all, they did precisely dick after Sandy Hook. Still haven't. And so consequently, yeah, why, okay. I mean, if the Rona didn't get them, Some young white freedom protector would have. Protector? Mm-hmm. Trump spoke to Dr. Fauci, Lee says. Did the dialogue go like this? Mr. President, we have to make changes to reduce infections.
Tony, you're a loser. I have a big brain. The economy's great. We can't shut it down again. These cases are going to disappear. No problem. Why do you not understand this?
And the economy's not great. And you know what? If they don't shut it down, the Rona will do it for them. It's a question of whether or not one does it rationally and with purpose. Or you let it just haphazardly be shut down by a pandemic that spreads and spreads and spreads and spreads. And you might refer back to Stephen New York's little ray of sunshine note from the beginning of the program. Yeah. Brother Deacon Asa has a question for the maggots. If all news is fake news, how do we know that John Lewis is really dead? How do we know he's not with, like, Elvis and Tupac? Good point. Good point. Michigan or Mars, one or the other. And a little while back, Megan, as we were reveling in the wit and wisdom of Jesse Lee Peterson, said, I'm having a hard time taking anything Jesse Lee is saying about John Lewis. All I hear is a whole lot of jealousy that a black man who got his rear end beat damn near to death fighting racism in this country actually rose to prominence, and not only that, but is beloved and dearly missed. Yeah, nobody's gonna miss Jesse Lee. It's like that old joke about what's the difference between a banjo and an onion. Nobody cries when you cut up a banjo. Yeah. Jeremy with a note. Chris McDonald, just another reason I enjoy being a McDonald. Yeah, I have to ask. I really don't, too. But is Jesse Lee an African-American? Yes, Jesse Lee is an African-American. And some members of that community, some members of the African-American community, have specific words for what kind of an African-American Jesse Lee is. I will not use those words. I'm not. That's not something I'm entitled to do. this is between Irish Dave and Lee. This is our second 2 Corinthians reference of the evening. Chlorine dioxide. Lee in New York says, where is chlorine dioxide mentioned in the Bible? 2 Corinthians? You guys are good. Because earlier, Dave said, I believe the 2 Corinthians are the tag team champs for the Monday Night SmackDown. he's a gift that keeps on giving. Kind of like the clap. Hello, Steve says, we learned in Men in Black that Elvis just went home. That's true. And since the last jobs number, because Steve is a self-professed data nerd, he says, since the last jobs number, Texas, California, North Carolina, and parts of Florida shut back down. Can't wait to see the unemployment numbers for July. You know, those are probably going to be a real lulu. And let's run over and check in on the stress line. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, brother.
Well, hey, Jude.
Gosh, you know, listening to everything that you've had to bring up so far, the one with, beloved Lewis, I mean, those two men will be forever in the dustbin of history. That was unbearable. But the more you talked about everything, it's like I'm kind of speechless because I'm so overwhelmed. I don't know if I should maybe call back another time.
Oh, no, you're fine. You're fine. We shift gears all the time.
Oh, but it was so many things. And that one with, towards the end with Trump, that business he's talking about Portland and they had to send him because of buildings, we don't need to be told that that's a lie. But the reason
you've been on the ground there, Jude. I mean, you are a fact witness in this. And you have the necessary evidence to prove it's a lie. And that's important.
And it's difficult, Bob. Well, because I know it has to be said, and I know that I have to speak about it. but I'm not necessarily comfortable doing that. But I'm getting better at it because I'm just trying to stay really focused. The reason that the most important thing out of all of it is these moms. I was blown away, Bob, with the power and the majesty and the focus of these women. When my daughter and I went down last Saturday, we spent the weekend down there, and we brought the boots and flowers. And when we got down, we had a little hotel we stayed at, and we kind of went, it's about three blocks from the federal building. And just to get kind of an idea, and there wasn't a lot of things going on, but you could tell right away there was a chain link fence, like what they did at Lafayette Park, around the park across the street from the federal building. And then the federal building, the whole first floor, it's like it's a huge, you know, they look like prisons. You have those great big pillars, those cement pillars, and back in there, there must be a door, but everything's, I'm assuming, boarded off. And it has a tremendous amount of graffiti, but they're also starting to do some, you know, important things. Like the moms, their color is yellow, and they have the daisies up. And so when we started the walk down towards to kind of get a sense of, you know, where we were going to do the peace stand or if it was possible as such, we made it to the, must have been the south entrance of the federal building. And I don't know if I sent you a photo. It's very heart-rendering because it's kind of a brown. It must be, I don't know, I'm 5'2". It must be like at least 10 feet tall. And it's very sturdy. It's not one of those little ones that you can, you know, kids can get going. And I put the boots, I had the boots over my shoulders, and I went to put them down, and I realized that I was, like, back down at the border where the children were. And I was, like, overwhelmed with that. And yet knew that we had to just, it's a convergence of so many issues, Bob, going on. And people actively being willing to do their part in it because there's so much, you know, whether or not it's just engaging with one another to talk about things. So when we went back up to the hotel and kind of got settled and then went back about 7:30 and the whole area had changed. The minute we turned the corner, which is like a block up from the federal building, it was like, you know, when we were kids, you'd have those little metal car things and you'd turn it up with the metal key and you'd let it go and it'd go spinning. That energy from the time we stepped around the corner gradually was intensified and intensified and intensified. It was overwhelming. But in the midst of it, my daughter started getting really nervous and I wanted to go down and do, you know, what it is we have to do. And make a long story short, although I appreciate being able to talk about it, we were standing off to the corner, and all of a sudden we heard this metal clanging, and I looked over, and all these group of kids, they were taking the metal fence at the park apart, pulling it off, but when they weren't throwing it. They take it down and then they put another, you know, someone would come behind and put another one on top. So it was done respectfully. And the crowd, which was like, gosh, there must have been 500-600 people, they were all in this unified chant. Whoever organized or started that really understands the intensity and the purpose of energy. Because when they would shout back, you know, you'd say Black Lives Matter, it was one voice, Bob, and I still get goosebumps from it. The power that emanated, and it reminded me, I thought, now I know exactly why it wants to be put down, because the earth trembles with it. I mean, that's what I, you know, not to be dramatic, but it leads me into yesterday when I went, I took the boots and flowers down, and my daughter couldn't come, and everybody started getting worried, and, you know, I just said, we do what we have to do. You know, we do this collectively as people that are, you know, willing to step out and then have people support us and care for us. And I met so many people down there. So I get into the, I had to take this train because I had to stay way, way out because I didn't really want to bring the car into Portland and park it. You know, I had to think about things to logically, you know, prepare. So there's this train that comes in, and I get off, and it's about five blocks. And meeting different people and such. And I'm coming, it must be like from the north going south, because the federal building, I'm pretty sure, faces west. So directions are interesting. No, because the sun was, anyway, forgive me.
It's quite all right.
Yes.
You're doing fine. You may be a little bit nervous, Jude, but you're doing fine.
I am nervous, and I think I'm nervous. I really don't know why. It just is part of the whole part of it.
Well, the most important thing that you understand is that you are among friends. So, you know, you can be at peace in that regard. And maybe that'll take some of the tension away.
Well, I appreciate hearing that, you know, because all of my dialogues are intimate things with people, you know, and this is not a forum. And I can relax and get into that because I know that what I'm saying, I can trust the other person with that on this kind of forum. And it's not that I don't trust anyone, but thank you for bringing that up because that will help. But when I get down to the federal building, the fence is gone from both the federal building and the park. And the park's open back up, and they have tents going on, and people are barbecuing. And, you know, and then they still have a lot of activity. They're still doing graffiti on the building, but even that was gone. And that was one of my thoughts when I left on Sunday, because on Saturday night they pulled it down. Sunday, when I went back to do a few standalone, the fence were back up again, and they were working. They had city workers putting the one up across where the federal building was. And I thought, why can't they just relinquish a little teeny tiny thing? So I was amazed to be able then to walk in front of the federal building, and then went in, could go in between where the graffiti was, and met some individuals. And there was a couple that did take a photo of the boots and flowers. I have my back.
I saw that. That was a powerful photograph, Jude.
Yeah, I thought, I really appreciated them, you know, being able to, just the polarity of both of that. So I came out of there, and then I began to be able to walk through the whole area, and it's like 2 blocks long. Getting a sense of people, nothing like Walla Walla and that trepidation with the SS tattoo, nothing at all like that. And kind of sensing, you know, who's who, and then found several places in which I could actually do a peace stand, which was wonderful, you know, and just stand there and close my eyes. And the sun was out, and, you know, there was a breeze, and there was harmony. And then little by little, it started filling up, and at about 8 o'clock when it started getting dark, I was standing catty corner, and I'm doing a peace stand, and you could hear kind of the chant starting, and all of a sudden, Bob, off to my left, there's this roar, and I open up my eyes, and it's the moms, and they must be 20 feet up wide. They took the whole street coming up, 20 feet, you know, some of them have goggles, and they have their yellow shirts on. It went on forever. And they started this, and I don't know what the chant was, but they started this rhythm and this energy and this movement. And I thought, wow. And you look up, because there's lights up in the federal building, but you never see anybody. You don't even see any police. The only time I saw a police car was when I was on the other side of the Columbia River. And I thought that was interesting, you know?
Well, aren't the, and maybe I'm wrong, Jude, but aren't the police, the Portland police, haven't they been withdrawn? Are they not under orders from city government not to cooperate with these goon squads? I could be wrong.
That's my understanding. Well, I've read so much on it, but it's hard to accumulate and hold on to that kind of thought. But that's even, you know, that in its own way is kind of frightening, but it's also really good because the greater, we only saw on Saturday night when the women, the mothers started chanting, and I think that was the actual first night the moms came out. I could be wrong, and I thought it was so strange because women standing them was present on the soil. And then another thing to bring up was that young woman that completely bare her soul. Did you see that video?
Yes.
And not to go on about that, but that was another, you know, for whatever reason. I mean, people do what they're going to do. But even in that, there was an enormous amount of strength. And she could have been ill. There could have been a lot of things. But the way in which she manifested, and then the young man that came up in front of her as they were shooting things, you know, not directly at
just,
her.
Just for those who don't know, tell us what you're talking about.
Well, this is something I didn't experience, but I picked it up. It was early Sunday morning when we were down there, and I didn't find this out till the next night. There was a young gal a young woman, probably, I don't know, it's hard to say. She was very thin, very tall, and they were dark. I didn't see that it was the military. There were portions of them, but there was also another color uniform. I guess I'll have to go back and look at it. They had already dispersed some of that gas or whatever. And they film her walking out in the middle of the street towards them, completely naked. And she's walking with a sense of course, how I perceive and what's real, I don't know. But with fortitude, I'm going to make a statement, I'm not.
Yeah, purpose and determination.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that was the way I perceived it.
Exactly. And I just thought it was extraordinary. And she comes up. And I don't know the sequence of when she sits down because I only have seen different portions of both of those. After the young man leaves, she ends up sitting down, facing them, and she has her legs raised, and she has her arms draped over her knees, with her back tall, and I guess you couldn't see the front of her, but she had a black mask on, so it was kind of a. I mean, I know that's way out there, but, you know,
under these circumstances, these extraordinarily trying circumstances, I don't know, Jude, if we can define anything as being out there. Because when you're resisting fascism, everything counts. Yeah. Everything counts.
Oh, I don't even know. I probably would have fallen over if I would have saw that in person because I was so taken back by the courage and the strength for that, you know, because we're in a society that sees things so salaciously and different. And, you know, I heard different things about it. And I thought, no, 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 no. But then getting back to the women coming and the chanting, it just kept going. And as soon as they made the curve in front of the federal building, they estimated there were over 1,000 people there. So from the park, this group starts flowing, and you guys and all of me, we're standing in this one corner, and as the women make this, the bodies come out, and they take the whole intersection, and it was remarkable, and they marched down for two blocks, and we all kind of filtered in together with chants and powerful. So we get to the end of it, and I'm kind of working my way around, and I find another place to stand. And what the moms have done, they're against the two buildings. There's the federal building, and then there's the intersection. And forgive me, but I'm not sure what the other one is. I know that there's a police station, but I don't think it's that.
Well, I do want you to, Jude, I do want you to know you're touching people. Jimmy just wrote in and said, Jude, I'm glad you made it back safe to the sound. Nice play on words there. Our friend Tamara said, thank you for the on the spot reporting. George says, relax, Jude. We're listening, and sends a heart emoji. And Alma in New Mexico said, oh my God, Jude, she's an awesome soul. She helped me when my sister got cancer. I met her through Mike. I'm so impressed with her activism and gentleness toward others. She's one of the best of us, so please tell her so before she gets off the phone. So many thanks to her. So like I said, you're among friends. And more than friends.
Well, thank you. Gosh.
But yeah, you see these things, and you see these things with eyes that are different from that of a journalist. You see these things clothed in the spirituality that many others miss or aren't even looking for or choose not to report if they do see it. You see the things that, or you perceive the things that are there because of the way, because of the nature, your open open nature, that I don't think anybody else is. I don't think anybody's going to get from some other kind of account. It's one thing to be dry and sterile about it. It's another thing to be, you know, so-called objective about it, but these are not objective times, and these are not events to be viewed objectively. This is not the kind of thing where there's two sides to every story. There's a right side and a wrong side of this story, and when you talk about the moms, you're talking about the right side of this story. I want to be clear about this. Every single individual who is a part of that goon squad is in the wrong. They are not good people. And you're probably more forgiving than I am. But I don't think you can be morally whole and put on that goon squad uniform. I don't think it's physically possible.
And look at that, the one with, I tried to find that Christopher David, you know, the veteran?
Yeah.
The Navy vet. But there were so many people. I wanted to gift him with that medallion that Women Standing Guard when we did a peace stand at an officer that was killed here in Tacoma. And, two men got out of their car and came up and had this beautiful, heavy medallion. It's traveled in the boots for years and years, but I couldn't find him. But to see what they did to him, and that none of those other military people did anything. He hit him with that baton like that and then sprayed him in the face. So it was, you know, knowing, you know, I always want to go and see for myself. And then the part of it is because wherever the boots go down, that becomes a place where peace opens up. I mean, that's how I've always viewed that and the women that do this with me. But what the moms did, the two whole blocks, they were arm in arm. And they were like three and four back to the sidewalk. And that's how they make the wall. So they turn. And again, the latest we've been able to stay was after 11 o'clock. And that's when they did that first round of, that foggy gas. And like I had written to you, I said, it didn't burn my eyes, but you could taste the metal in it. And things started chanting and going, and my daughter got really frightened. And, you know, one just has to pay attention to things. So I was extremely grateful that I was able to go by myself, but not alone, to be able to have that firsthand experience. And the moms, just, I haven't met them. I haven't, you know, I had to leave because I had to take the train back from downtown Portland, end up meeting a beautiful young man on his bike, because there, you know, my sons would have had a heart attack knowing that I was in the middle of an area like that at 11:30 at night. But I don't have that kind of fear. It's like whenever the boots and flowers are with me, it's like a mighty sword. But I also am, you know, acutely aware. I saw there was a grocery store right behind me that, you know, I could have opened the door. But a fellow comes up on his bike, and we start talking, and he says that he used to be a trainer, and he's tall and articulate, and he's got this neat hair kind of hanging down and doing different things, and talked about the boots. And he said, yeah, he says, I saw you at the protest. We were just walking and back and forth. And I said, well, is this the train, you know, that's going to take me back to the airport? He said, yes. And, he said, no, he says, probably we'll need the red train. He says, I think there's only one more. So So when his train comes, he goes to get on and he turns around. He goes, you know what? He says, I'm going to wait with you. He says, I can take that train home. Now, what an extraordinary thing to have happen in the midst of so much other going on.
Yes. You're still getting more commentary. Steve in New York says, Jude, those terrorists in green are supposed to be making an appearance in New York. I need to learn Jude's courage, restraint, and yes, love for my enemy that she has to protest without letting my anger get out of control. I find myself becoming so enraged and disgusted at what's going on that I'm a bit scared to go to a protest because of what I might do. Honestly, that's one of the reasons I haven't gone to a protest yet.
Mm.
Any advice, Jude?
And that is... What his name again?
Steve in New York, yes.
Steve in New York. Well, Steve, this is interesting. When I was talking to Bryce last night, he goes down there quite often, but he says, I don't go so much anymore. He says, I found myself getting so enraged all the time. And he says, I forgot that I was supposed to go out into nature and take a look and take care of myself. He says, what goes on now usually hits its peak about 1:30 in the morning. And those are all the young people that have the right intentions, but they're focusing their energy in the wrong way. He says, I tell them, you need to take a break. He says, what happens? They even start fighting with each other. And it brings me into the understanding a woman standing for Steve, because it could be a man standing, men standing. It's the study of kinesiology. It's power versus force. And that's what I view every time, especially down there at the Federal Building. What power looks like, you can't dissolve it. And force, which comes out of there, I mean, it's that conflict. Like, I might have trouble talking with all of you on the line right now, but yet, you know, the irony is to be able to be where I go and be okay there. That's kind of a strange thing, but I'm beginning to, you know, embrace it more and more as I go along. But I think to be beneficial right now, it's extremely important that people start collectively finding ways in which we can deal with this. And it's not always, you know, having to do petitions and all those things are important. But if we lose touch with each other because something would happen, there should be another way that we can sense what's going on with one another. And I think being contemplative, learning how to breathe, being really disciplined about what is the purpose. When I go out, I know what my purpose is. And each time, you know, someone asks about that, I says, just be clear with yourself. Do kind of an inventory and realize, do you really want to make a change? You know, and this is something that's worked for myself and the women that do this. So I hope that helps him.
I think it is helpful because, you know, the difference, I think there's a gender difference here too, Jude.
Probably, yeah.
I'm not trying to make things unnecessarily complicated, but through 100,000 years of human evolution, largely the males of the species have been the ones who attempted to solve problems through violence, and the males of the species who didn't who tried a different tack wind up being your Gandhis. And your Jesuses, and your Buddhas, and dare I say it, you know, Dr. King and John Lewis, who rejected violence as a problem solving tool because they realized that truly it's a bit of a cliche at this point, but that violence solves nothing. Even if you think violence solved a problem, you find that what comes after is another set of problems that were born of the violence. You see what I'm saying? And among women, this is not to say that a woman cannot be absolutely as awful or more awful than a man, because we have plenty of proof of that. Whether it be Laura Ingraham or pick any Republican female member of the Senate or the House of Representatives, The potential for awful is always there, but I think it exists. I think it's driven by a different dynamic, I guess is what I'm saying. Other Steve, this would be Steve from Georgistan, who says, Jude probably doesn't remember me, but we still have the shell she gave us at the Malloy book signing. Karen made a beautiful shell garden. Karen made a beautiful shell garden out of them. Jude has touched more people than she can possibly imagine.
Well, yes, I do remember Steve because he came in to help with the barbecue because I was trying to clean up after, you know, to help you at Mike Malloy's thing. And I had the best dialogue with him, and Karen and I sat down and we shared photos of my trip to Zion. Yeah, I do very much. And I had really hoped to, you know, to have continued. I very much appreciate being able to connect with them because that was, and I was trying to, everyone was having kind of a glass of wine or maybe a beer or something. No one was really drinking. And I can't drink white wine or anything, but I said, gosh, is there red? I could have maybe a glass of red. And he's like looking, trying to find it. And I said, that's okay. Yeah, he's a real clean soul. They both are.
Well, like he says, you touch more people than you can possibly imagine.
Well, we do this together. You know, we do this collectively together. But getting back to what you're talking about, the difference with men and women kind of in how they view and handle things. Another thing with being out, because I also stand here at Fort Lewis and McCord, so I'm kind of aware of, I just get a, you can tell when things are going on. I only live about four blocks from one of the bases, and some nights, some of these fast, great big things take off, you know, it'll, my floor will tremble. And sometimes the engines get so high-pitched that you think that your eardrums are going to explode, and it'll take off, and then you don't hear it again. You don't hear anything. It's so, you know, just such a... And I don't know why I went into that, Bob.
Well, I think probably because it all ties together. In a state verging on a complete collapse into fascism, there, you know, all these authoritarian forms of force projection merge.
Well, you help bring me back to it. That's exactly it. And what I would say for anyone, like, was Steve again up in New York?
Yeah. And Kyle, Kyle just wrote in and said, thank you, Jude, for your leadership in these terrible times. I'm with Steve and so many others in that I know I'd probably do something to get myself in a really bad way if I attended any protest right now because I'm so pissed off at everything, but congrats on showing so much strength to not do that in the face of literal terrorists. And I won't kid you, Jude.
Well,
Agnes and I have had conversations late into the night worrying about you. And hoping that you will be safe and remain safe or surrounded with whatever the universe can provide you to keep you safe, because these are it's not necessarily dangerous from the standpoint of the people that you join or with whom you stand or on whose side you are. The danger comes from the people who are not supposed to project danger. The danger comes from these goon squads who were never conceived to be agents of terror, but have been transmogrified into that by a terrorist in the White House and his enablers.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
If that makes sense.
It does, but, you know, this, absolutely. And this group, I'm going to go. I think I'm going to be going back down again on Saturday to try to make better arrangements to stay closer because I really want to be able to witness what goes on after. I mean, I would never stay when things would get crazy. And I also would find, I take really good care of myself, but I think it's extremely important, to stand on that soil. Just like that thing that Trump said about all those buildings being destroyed. Well, there was a young kid that was kicking in part of the concrete But it was like Bryce last night talking to me, waiting for the train. He says, here they are. They're good kids, but they have all this anger, and here they are fighting with each other. They don't know how to harness it and to do something with it. But also, you know, from my perspective, I know I mentioned about the bases right here. There is a lot of heavy male energy that you can feel. It's a real cold, solid kind of, you know, all military bases are. And for men, I would think, you know, we don't know where we're going to end up. You know, is that we're going to end up in some kind of barricade, you know, I mean, literally, you know, the country. And that kind of energy, I would think, to have to fight to save lives, that needs to be refined and placed somewhere for when it's needed, and not let it drain out of some, you know, let it drain out of us because of all the things going on. Find out how to utilize it, and that's been
or perhaps repurposed,
repurposed. Yes,
because
individually, how it is
a military by definition is a body, a group that is conceived deliberately for purposes of doing violence, and you resort to it, and all the great sages of the world agree. Sun Tzu says war is the last choice. Violence should be the last choice. When the fighting starts, you've already had one loss because you're fighting. And you know, Sun Tzu on the Art of War is it has its own brilliance, because it's not glorifying war for the sake of warfare, but trying to purpose the correct use of a group deliberately formed to do violence. And Steve in New York says, thank you, Jude. Lots to ponder and consider.
Yes, yes, yes.
And Megan said, serious question. Listening to Jude's account, how long before we have a Dark Knight Rises-style brawl in the streets? Because peaceful or no, people are only going to take so much before they pop. And I can't help that. And maybe this is pure paranoia, and I've crossed over and started working the Alex Jones side of the street. But what do they expect in the middle of a pandemic that has caused an economic collapse of the worst since the Great Depression? How are the pressure valves not going to get pushed up into the critical levels? And then when you do that to people, then that in turn gives the fascists the casus belli to go into the streets and clamp down. I know it's cliche to make references to the German regime of the 1930s, but the Reichstag fire model is a very real model. And in a matter of days or weeks, everything changed after the Reichstag fire. And I can't evade the sense, Jude, that is what these people are trying to take advantage of as a means of retaining and increasing power.
Absolutely. It's like a great big petri dish, you know, just all these test case here, big test case.
I mean, if you've got a pressure cooker full of pinto beans, and you just and you clamp it down, and you crank the heat up to high, and you don't let the pressure get off or reduce, pretty soon you're going to have a kitchen with the walls and ceiling covered in beans, and that pressure cooker is going to turn into shrapnel. You know, remember. At the Boston Marathon bombing, those homemade bombs were made of literally pressure cookers.
Yes. Yes.
And so I think the analogy is apt. And what I sense is that people like you are trying to show other people how to turn down the heat. I mean, if you're a young person in America and you've got any morals or any ethics to you, and you're not furious, there's probably something wrong. These are infuriating times. And their futures have been stolen from them.
Yes. I saw a lot of them there, different types of, you know, different ages. I probably was, you know, I'm going to be 72 here in a little bit, but you could tell the serious, and most of them probably were around 30, you know, just prepared, having pretty much everybody has their helmets on. You know, they carry their goggles, and they're not inciters. They're not, instigators. And it made sense when I was talking with Bryce last night about how they get themselves up and it's late and, you know, they come out. They're just, the agitators are within. They come out of this section. It's close to where the photo I sent you. That's how come I wanted to see if they could capture that. They come out behind this, you know, the great big sheets that they put up on windows, plywood, just burst out. Now, I've only seen that on the videos, and I was talking to, you know, Bryce about that last night, and he's seen that, and they come out, you know, just ready for bear, start all their action, just like how we saw the gas that night on Saturday, and the crowd started in.
Yeah, you know, I'm not being corrective, Jude, but when we talk about that, Let's call it what it is, because I know language matters to you. When they deploy chemical weapons against peaceful protesters, when they deploy chemical weapons that are illegal to use in warfare against American citizens, they are committing atrocities. You know, because we say, you know, tear gas as if, it's going to make you cry a little bit. That stuff can kill. And it is, in fact, recognized the world over as chemical warfare. And that's not me preaching at you. That's me trying to get us to reframe this issue and understand what these goon squads are doing. I saw a photo of a young African-American man who was shot in the eye with a non-lethal beanbag round. He doesn't have an eye anymore. An Appalachian woman, a journalist by the name of Linda Tirado, is down to one eye now because she was hit in the eye with a non-lethal round when these things are not even supposed to be fired in such a way that they could strike someone in the head. It is directly contrary to how they are trained to use these so-called non-lethal rounds. They are engaging in deliberate acts of violence against American citizens. You just got a note from Shorty in L.A. Jude, bless your heart. These fights were instigated weeks before. The best thing about nonviolence is when it is filmed. The viewers are witness to unprovoked violence by the unlawful law enforcers. I watch Portland Federal Building every night. These kids crowd stream to cover their butts. But almost every night, the federal police attack peaceful protesters. I'm glad you're not there in the earlier AM. We have photos of the munitions they've dispersed.
Yeah, it's thick, thick. Even the ones that they did Saturday night, I mean, we were like probably 100 feet back, became this wall. You know, and I don't want to come across like I'm some kind of Pollyanna kind of gal. I'm really not.
No, you're not.
It's just something you're tough that
as,
I have.
No, Jude, you're tough as nails.
Okay.
I know that.
You know, I know maybe some. Okay. Well, I wanted to, because I never would. Women's Standing was given, you know, to me back in 2006. And I have such respect for it, you know, and I often, you know, I talk with the kids. I say, guys, what happens when I, who's going to get my boots when I die? And they all, you know, everybody wants the boots. It's just, it's traveled so many miles and they're like, you know, I view the men that I've made connections with, like when I went down to Walla Walla, with Mikey's foundation and all of them, they were giants. And I had the, honest to God, I had a sense of walking with giants. And then I end up standing with three men, young men, that are giants, it looks like. So it provides something. But I also know, you know, I've been around for a long time. I know the dangers of things, but I try to prepare and do what I'm directed to do. And that comes out of the discipline of doing this for so long. So
well, and,
I appreciate
and,
it. I feel so much better.
And Shorty added something. She said, when Trump talked about Portland earlier, that means tonight will be hell there. And says, if the Horn listeners are up at 2 a.m., YouTube, Portland Andy is the account. Mm-hmm. Portland Andy. And she's probably right, because you know he says what he says as means of incitement. And he loves punishing a place like Portland because he knows that he is almost, not entirely, universally despised there, or at least in the sane part of the state, you know, west of the mountains. And our buddy Mike in Cascadia, Jude, says, I'm planning on going down to Portland Friday or Saturday. I went to university in Portland, and I have family down there, so it's my second home.
Oh.
Not sure if I'll spend the night and if I'll go solo or with one or two of my adult kids at this point. I wake up every morning at 2 a.m. when this dystopian nightmare is the most vivid. So, of course, I go onto Twitter and view the Portland activities when the fascist atrocities are at their highest. A couple of nights of seeing that has made me make the decision to head down there and stand up for what's right. Thanks to Jude for her words, wisdom, and humanity. And that's Mike in Cascadia. Todd wrote in from South Carolina. I'm really glad to hear Jude and her accounts. This really adds texture to the fabric of the program. This is one reason why the Horn is so special.
And
Shorty just says, Jude, promise yourself that you will not be there near 2 a.m. And
oh, definitely not. No, my cutoff is midnight.
And then this, chemical weapons by local police helps spread COVID-19. The nose, ears, eyes, and mouth screws up the mask. I did not know
that.
Well,
you
know,
when you mentioned earlier. I don't know if it's not viscous, but there is, it's very surreal. And to know that we're standing in these times, but we're experiencing these times, it's so important to find areas that we can stay healthy and get through it. And yeah, I have times that I get really pissed off. I mean, sometimes I can't, but then I, you know, go out and just do it. I have garden, you know, I got home and I pulled my couch out and ripped the rug out and did the floors and just kind of settled myself in again. And, it's been really good. Oh, I'm very grateful. But if he's going to go down, I'd love to connect with
Mike,
with the gentleman, if he's going to. Mike? Yeah.
Well, I will. Once Mike finalizes his plans, if Mike would be kind enough to shoot him to me, I'll pass him along to you.
That'd be great.
Well, Jude, I have to knock off a little bit early this evening. I'm saying goodbye for another year to my my sister and brother-in-law, and they'll be blowing out about an hour from now and heading back down to a hot spot. You know, this pandemic is worrisome and trying upon the spirit.
I worry having to do certain things, but when I do the best I can when I come back here, to try to stay healthy and everything. But thank you, community, very much. I really have a sense of, a connection with far more many people than I have before, and kind of help this old gal along here and get ready for the next.
Well,
the next thing
I know how strong you are. And I have some knowledge of the level of your determination and commitment, so I have no doubt that I know you're doing the right thing, and I would be willing to bet that the people you meet and engage with during the course of your travels, they are made the better for the time they have spent in your presence.
And they for me, you know, to open up and want to engage. That wonderful flow. Well, thanks so much. Thank you very much, Bob. And my love to everyone, and we'll talk again.
Okie doke. Jude, take care.
Okay, dear. Yeah, you too, dear. Good night.
Bye now. And that was Jude of Women Standing. Shorty says, Jude, put one hand on each shoulder and squeeze. That's the hug I'm sending you. It sounds like we made it 2 hours into the program. Probably a good idea that I'm knocking off now, because I hear what sounds like some pretty ugly weather coming this way. I heard from Nydia earlier, and she's west of me, and said her power had been knocked out. So, batten down the hatches. But we'll be back for Thorn in the Side Thursday tomorrow. We'll be at $400 for a fundraising goal there. Thanks for those of you who jumped in to help knock it down. And much appreciated, because this is how we keep this conversation going. And I've said it before, and I'll say it again. I'm convinced that these times, as trying as they are why this program has lasted as long as it has. And that it is vital that we be able to continue this conversation. And I thank you all for making it possible. Thanks to all of you who share in the program and participate and share your precious finite time engaging in whatever manner you so choose. Thank you so very much. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks this evening to Steve from Georgia Stan in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Cold River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. 20-plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And remember, you can now use the Amazon app when you're making Amazon purchases. Unpaid product placement, by the way. But you can use the Amazon app and use that to go through smile.amazon.com. And 0.5% of your purchase price will go to Coal River Mountain Watch if you nominate them to be the beneficiary of your purchase proceeds. And that's really helpful. Thank you. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Stay safe. Wash your hands. Don't touch your face. Use your hand sanitizer. Wear your masks. Trust science, not COVIDiots. And for heaven's sakes, if you see someone without a mask, or they're burbling whatever the latest conspiracy theory is. Somewhere I've got a clip in here, I didn't get it to it this evening, of a woman declaring that she's figured out that masks don't work because you can still smell a fart even though you're wearing pants. Yeah. Well, any of those people, avoid them like the plague, because they are. Later, y'all.